FCK Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next installment of your favorite podcast. It is October 27th. This episode is fueled by, I'm sipping on Shock Top right now. My brother was kind enough to bring by a six pack of the Belgian White. This is the orange, right?
I think so. It's something that I've always wanted to try out, so I figured I'd grab a six for tonight's occasion.
Word. And a couple shots of the good Sir Jameson. This reminds me a lot of Blue Moon, but light. It's like Blue
Pretty
Moon
much. Light. They had Blue Moon was right next to it, so I thought, you know, it can't be too far from that.
I'm pretty sure Anheuser-Busch owns this, but not bad. So, anyway, it is a special occasion this evening. It is our 10th podcast. We have reached our first milestone, so thank you to any listeners that have been with us this whole time. We appreciate y'all riding with us. And with that, we prepared a tribute to the number 10. Some great number 10s have made quite an impact on the Atlanta sports scene over the years, and the first one that comes to my mind is the one and only, the man responsible for Pearl Jam's first album being named 10, Mr. Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, being an Atlanta fan and being a fan of the Hawks, I think Mookie was probably the first guy that we really had post or right around the time of Dominique Wilkins, you know, who was like another legit kind of star in the making. I think he made maybe one All-Star game, but yeah, Mookie is definitely one of the first that comes to mind. Other guys that come to mind, of course, staying in basketball, Mike Bibby.
Word.
Venturing out of there, one of the greats of all time for the Braves, I think, you know, Chipper Jones.
One of the greats, period, if you ask me. I mean, he's a for sure Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think so. First ballot.
First ballot, for sure. One that I found peculiar was that, little known fact, both Greg Olsons, both former Atlanta Braves, Greg Single G Olson, the catcher, wore number 10 from 1990 to 93, and then Greg Double G Olson, he was a right-handed pitcher, I want to say.
Right. Wasn't he a relief pitcher or something?
Yeah, he was like a middle relief guy. He wore the jersey number in 1994, and then the great Larry Chipper Jones wore it from 95 all the way up until he retired.
Yeah, I mean, we were just before we got started on the recording, we were trying to talk about if he is maybe even a top five player of all time. I thought personally it's a little bit of a stretch because when you think of top five Braves, the first names that come to my mind anyway are Hank Aaron, the home run king. Then you got Greg Maddux, probably one of the most dominant starting pitchers of all time. You probably got to throw Smoltz in there because of his, you know, he did great as a starter, transitioned into a, you know, a lights out reliever.
Did you know that John Smoltz is the only pitcher in history to log 20 wins and 50 saves?
I did not know that.
In separate seasons, not in the same season, of course.
Yeah, I mean, he really did, you know, transition just pretty seamlessly. I mean, he, you know, he led us in saves like one of the years that he converted to be the closer. So, I mean,
sure.
I think he's got to be there as far as just for being such a diverse pitcher.
Word.
So, I mean, it'd be tough because then you're looking, you know, then you're looking even at like Phil Niekro.
For sure, who was before our time, but still one of the greats. When you asked me this question right before we delved into this podcast, I had said, oh, definitely. You know, the first reaction is Chipper's one of the greatest Braves of all time, no doubt in my mind. But then we started rattling it off, and for sure, man, I mean, you got Aaron, Niekro, I think we said Dale Murphy.
Yeah, Dale Murphy is another one that's probably, he's got to be right up there, too.
John Smoltz.
So it's right there.
And
I mean,
Mad Dog.
Yeah, he's pushing top five. Then you have to consider, what about, like, Tom Glavine?
Exactly. You know? Glav was great, man.
Dave Justice, even when we talked about him, I mean, he's a top 10, top 15 type, you know.
He was a great Brave for a long time. But then, you know, do you separate the batters and the pitchers? Because it's two different sides of the ball. I mean,
if you separate batters and pitchers, then Chipper's in for sure. And which is funny because he's probably easily a top 10 shortstop of all time. You know, I would think that, you know, if you want to consider his original position before he transitioned to third base.
He played the bulk of his career at third base, though, right?
I think so, because he played the back half, the latter end of his career at third as he got more, became more of a power guy. So yeah, he moved away from shortstop. So
one of the most prolific switch hitters of all time wore number 10. Who else?
Let's see, real quick. You had Steve Bartkowski. He was the Falcons' number one overall pick back in 1975. He is still our the Falcons' career leader in passing yards.
That was before my time, though, man. I only remember Chris Miller was the first Falcons quarterback I remember.
Yep, I think he was. Yeah, he was one of the first ones too. I think he wore number 10 as well. Now that I think about it, the only other guy that we had, real quick, Sir Francis Tarkenton, great. Georgia Bulldog. He is a Hall of Famer in both the NCAA and the NFL.
I wonder how many NCAA, how many dual Hall of Famers are there, out there. Stat Guy, can you check that out for us? Appreciate it. What else, man? I mean, Pele wore number 10.
Yeah, I didn't even get into soccer just because
damn
number,
near
10,
everyone wears number 10.
Yeah,
right?
All of the big time like strikers, you know, wore the number 10.
Because of
or
Pele.
Or wear the number 10. Yeah.
Pele started that trend.
Yeah, so it was maybe as we get further along into the development of this podcast, we can dip into European and other global, international football. But for now, yeah, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, Pele's there. I think Messi wears number 10.
Of course, Messi wears number 10.
Ronaldo wears 9, I think.
He wears 9?
I think he wears 9. But anyhow, all right, so let's get going right off with college football talk. And I wanted to do a game. And when we talked about this last time, I almost couldn't contain myself. But here we are. We're going to play Is It a Bowl Game? All right, so for this game, what we're going to do, I'm going to ask you a handful of of bowl game names.
All right.
And I want you to tell me if it's either currently a bowl game or has been a bowl game at some point, you know, in recent, you know, recent memory.
Man, this reminds me a lot of that game. I want to say they play it on Rome where they say, is this a porn star or a thoroughbred racehorse?
This could very well. I'm hoping that this turns out to be as comedic as that.
Or maybe it's porn name. Maybe it's porn title. Anyway, all right, go ahead, hit me.
All right, so first one on the list, you have, is it a bowl game? The famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and admit to this one. I cheated on this one.
Oh!
I know, man. I know. Well, I want to give the listeners an honest reaction, man. So here's the thing, though. I had seen a commercial, like a little blip that was, or maybe it was just a little snippet of text earlier in the week, and then I had caught it when I went to review the notes for this tonight's podcast.
Gotcha.
I saw it when I opened up the file, so it wouldn't exactly be fair if we allowed that one to fly. So go ahead and throw the next one at me.
All right, so the next one then is going to be the Boca Raton Bowl.
Oh, Boca Raton. Boca Raton being a city in the panhandle of Florida, I believe that is a bowl game.
Correct. That is okay. A bowl game.
Boom shakalaka.
That is a bowl game. 2 for 2. All right, so the next one. The New Era Pinstripe Bowl.
That's for sure a bowl game. I remember this one from last year.
Damn.
I know.
3 for 3. All right. So what about... this is my personal favorite. What about the Maruchan Ramen Noodle Bowl?
Wow. As a man who loves his... ramen noodles of all brands. I like Top. I like Maruchan.
I don't know if I'm butchering the pronunciation.
We're being very bad Asians right now. I'm going to go with no, that is not currently a bowl game.
That is correct. It is not a bowl game.
Boom. All right.
Batting 1,000, 4 for 4. Next on the list, the Miami Beach Bowl.
Ooh, that's a wild card because it sounds like it could be a bowl game.
Sounds legit.
I'm going to go with that is a bowl game.
It is a bowl game.
Okay. Man, these weren't very hard at all.
They were funnier to me when I was typing them out. Especially when I came up with the ramen noodle bowl. That was my personal favorite.
The joke looked so good when I was writing it.
It sounded a lot funnier just, you know, in my own head. So next on the list, the Macy's Parade Bowl.
So, yeah, I'm going to go that's a bowl game because they do spend a ton of money on the Black Friday parade.
Correct.
Boom.
6 for 6.
Boom. You got to get up early in the morning to sneak one by me.
And last but not least, trying to go 7 for 7, the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl.
That is not a bowl game. Oh, he misses on the last one.
6 for 7. That is a bowl game.
Wow.
Surprised me. I had to double check that just to make sure that I had my facts straight. The Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl is, in fact, a bowl game.
That's insane. I was completely... So I was thinking that maybe it was like on the docket for a future bowl game. I didn't know it was currently a bowl game.
You know, speaking of Wiki, and they've got some foreign countries that are there to making some proposals. I saw that it didn't surprise me that the United Arab Emirates area,
right,
is trying Qatar to get in on the bowl action. Yeah, it's like the Dubai $1 billion ballers bowl.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. But then I saw like Ireland was trying to get in on that as well.
Really?
So it'd be interesting. I mean, logistically, that'd be kind of a badass vacation, you know, if you're talking about, well, let's go somewhere, you know, somewhere enjoyable for a bowl game.
For sure.
That'd be kind of cool.
I know that I remember reading stories about how UGA players were more than pleased to go play Hawaii at,
right,
Hawaii.
Exactly, yeah.
For the, was it Capital One Bowl that year? I want to say it was a Capital One Bowl that was hosted in Hawaii.
Yeah, I can't remember which one, but yeah, it's a nice little consolation, you know, aside from all the swag that, you know, players and staff get for, you know, for being participants in the bowl.
Word.
So you want to do, while we're talking about bowl games, you want to get into this the new playoff rankings?
Oh, absolutely, man, because those meetings are going on, like, right now.
Yeah,
right?
They happen today, yeah.
Word. So, yeah, they're starting off with the playoff, the 4-team playoff. They'll soon be transitioning to the 8-team playoff, I'm sure, as soon as they can get that approved, because there's more money left on the table.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's inevitable that they're going to go to... You know, to 8 teams. I mean, even if they go to like 6 at first, to see if that's something that's going to be viable. Which I'm sure once they see the money, the revenue streams, they're gonna, you know, they'll be sure to they'll capitalize.
Exactly. So the rankings committee, is that what they're calling it?
Mm-hmm.
They'll be publishing their ranking every Tuesday. So it's basically the same distribution of information that we've had during the BCS era. It's just that instead of having the complex algorithm that the BCS was,
right,
with the computer rankings and the AP poll and the coaches poll.
And I think that was always the biggest knock on the BCS, was that there was too much on the computer polls, and especially like the Harris poll, you know, all the non-human polls that were just being taken, that it wasn't something that was you know, conductive towards figuring out a true number one or true number two.
So it sounds to me like they're electing 13 judges to meet and discuss the current status of college football, and they come out with who they think, you know, because it's made up of like former ADs, former coaches, like people that should be authoritative figures in the college football.
Yeah.
Stratosphere.
Yeah, for the most part, I like all of the the people that have been put onto this first committee. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, you see names like like Barry Alvarez, longtime coach with Wisconsin. No. Yeah, it was Wisconsin, and he was the AD there when he stepped down. Let me see who else. I think Pat Hayden. He's the director of athletics at USC.
Again. I want to say Willingham's on there.
Let me see. I know Archie Manning was on there.
Word.
Oliver Luck, Andrew Luck's dad. Yeah, so you got some. Yeah, so you got some. Quarterback dads there. Tom Osborne. You know, big time name in the, you know, in God's country.
Right.
Nebraska.
Word. The thing that gets me is that there's no SEC representation.
Looking at the list, it doesn't seem like nothing direct.
Right.
Nothing direct.
So every other conference, every other major conference at least, is represented. USC, the Big Ten.
Right. I mean, the Pac-12 is repped heavy with Luck and Pat Hayden. I mean, that's USC,
right,
and Stanford right there.
And Willingham. I want to say Tyrone Willingham.
Yeah, Willingham's there. So.
Word. The thing,
I mean,
that's
pretty spread. It's pretty well spread out.
And the wild card, the 13th judge, Condoleezza Rice.
I'm still at a loss there, to be honest with you.
I don't understand that one at all. Maybe someone can explain this to me.
I mean, look at here's her pedigree. Yeah, and I'm just looking at a USAtoday.com article on it real quick.
She's a brilliant person, don't get me wrong.
Oh, for sure. No, for sure. But, you know, we don't have, you know, we're not looking for, like, Mensa, you know, members to to determine college football. Because then we're going to get it back right into what they're trying to get away from, which was statistical analysis, computerized rankings, and things of that nature. This was supposed to be more of a, you know, when the rubber meets the road.
Interpretive analysis.
Exactly. Yeah. So adding her in there, I mean, it's definitely a curveball. Maybe it's a good thing. Yeah, maybe she will inject just enough of that kind of, you know, other-sided, you know, opinion that will help encourage the rest of the committee or, you know, other members of the committee.
So what's her pedigree? Does she even watch college football?
I mean, I think everybody watches college football, so you got to assume she does.
I would hope everyone watches college football. If you're not watching college football, you don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, you've been living under a rock or something. So, but yeah, so I mean, it's going to be interesting. You know, like I said, they met today. The very first rankings will be released tomorrow. We'll be sure to talk about that in a couple weeks. Just a quick heads up, I might try to do a solo supplemental pod while you're out of town for the cocktail party this weekend.
I think you absolutely should.
Yeah, we're going to give it a try. So, since we're talking about it, and it does segue, you know, quite well, Todd Gurley.
Yep.
So, the big thing there, we're talking about the Georgia-Florida game. Will
big
Muschamp.
News.
Muschamp was talking about, he's expecting, they're practicing and expecting him, Gurley, to be reinstated for Saturday's game.
Is Muschamp, does he still got a job?
As far as I know.
I didn't think he was still coaching down in Florida.
Honestly, he hasn't been coaching much of anything. The results have been pretty pitiful. And be honest with you, we talked about this offline, but I didn't think that he was going to make it past his bye week. I mean, I honestly thought that if they're going to axe a dude midseason, they're going to go ahead and do it now while they have a week to kind of get the new guy ramped up.
Right.
And then just move on, because this has just been an abject failure. And I hate to see Muschamp go through it. He's a, you know, he's a former Bulldog. Hated to see him go to Texas first and then now to to Florida. But man, he's just not, you know, not cut out for head coach work, it doesn't seem.
Now see, Muschamp died to me when he left Texas and went to Florida. You joined the dark side. So, you know, I closed the book on Will Muschamp and said, you know what, good luck, have a nice day.
Yeah, and that's tough because he was great. You know, he was a great Bulldog, and maybe he'll find his way back to Bulldog Nation now that he's done screwing around with the Gators.
Maybe. But so anyway, you'd be a fool not to prepare for Todd Gurley. But I think one thing to point out is that we really didn't see that dramatic of a reduction at the running back position going to our favorite, Nick Bruiser.
Yeah, and that has been, Chubb has been a revelation, and he really lends truth to the recruiting tactic when these guys get out there and talk about, because we landed not only Nick Chubb, but we also got Sonny Michel in the same draft class. Those are two five-star tailbacks in the same recruiting class. And the whole concept was, look, man, you never know what's going to happen, and you could never have too much depth. And early in the season, that was the talk about Georgia was, how are they going to get all these carries for all these tailbacks? But when it came down to it, look at that. We had literally had just enough.
Exactly. When you play an SEC schedule, you have to account for injury. It's a smart thing to do. And, you know, to add to that, we brought on these two five-star recruits to go along with our already two five-star recruits in Keith Marshall and Todd Gurley.
Gurley was only a four-star recruit coming out of North Carolina. He was the lesser of the two recruits.
I was just going to say, you pointed it out to me, and I was hoping you pointed it out again for the pot, for the FCKers out there, the devoted listeners. Todd Gurley was, in fact.
Yeah, four-star, and he was not the heralded back in even Georgia's recruiting class, let alone nationally.
Well, he sure enough put in work and became the complete running back that he is today.
For sure.
I'll be looking out for him next year in my fantasy draft. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely grown into legitimate Heisman hopeful. Here's to hoping that he is able to get reinstated in time for, you know, if not the Florida game, you know, for the back half of, you know, of the season, so he can, you know, so he can get these games in, so he can try to, you know, finish up on this Heisman run. You know, I think he could get right back into it.
For sure. So, getting the facts out of the way, he missed two games. He has now sat out the recommended penalty for the amount of benefits received, which is $400 for signing merch. And the plan is going to work as Georgia intended. Scared the hell out of me, for one. Scared the hell out of Bulldog Nation. And went ahead and paid the price. Gonna get that time served and hopefully get Gurley reinstated for this Florida game.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I was so upset when that whole thing happened and they self-reported. But after that whole shock and anger stage wore off, it made a lot of sense. And you know what helped with that is the fact that we kept winning.
Right.
The fact that, you know, that we came in to Missouri and blanked them and then, you know, got the job done against Arkansas. Hey, winning cures everything.
Man, big ups to Coach Mark Richt. Big ups to Scott Pruitt for getting the team up. We surrendered 32 points over the last two games at Missouri, and we were at home for Arkansas.
I think we were in Arkansas.
Were we
can't
in
remember.
Arkansas? I thought we were in Athens. Anyway, stat guy, check that for us. Appreciate it. But 13 of those 32 points were basically slop time minutes.
Yeah.
Arkansas put up 26 points in the second half of that game. So
yeah, so it's been... like I said, we're going to get back to, you know, the rich getting richer. You know, if we get Gurley back, then that means we can continue to, you know, just pound teams into submission with even more effectiveness when you have those two guys sharing the load again. So looking forward to it. Hope Gurley gets back, you know, and hope this whole thing just kind of goes away and, you know, everything's, water under the bridge after this point.
If we can manage to beat Auburn, we stand a legitimate chance to win the SEC. If we win the SEC, we're without a doubt in the top four.
If we win, the SEC winner will go to the playoff game. You can count on that. It doesn't matter if it's a one-loss team or two, even a two-loss team. Because let's say the West continues to cannibalize themselves. LSU just upset one of the Mississippi teams. Who'd they get? They got Mississippi.
They got
Ole Miss. They got Ole Miss.
Right.
So Mississippi State still gotta get through, you know, a little bit of their schedule. So the SEC winner will get a playoff bid. If Georgia wins the SEC and you have a one-loss team, like we talked about, if you have a one-loss team on the West side, we can probably argue for two of the four teams in the playoffs this year.
Word. I think that if Oregon manages to pull it off against Stanford, you can go ahead and pencil them in as one of the four, which, you know, a part of me says, nah, because losing to Arizona, and you should walk right through that 12-pack schedule and the 12-pack championship as well. So if they pull it off against Stanford, put them in. If they lose to Stanford, I don't see a two-loss Oregon team making it in.
There's no way to get in with two losses. And even with SEC, it's still going to be difficult. I mean, it would literally take a second loss being from the conference championship game. Because, I mean, in essence, those losses are not supposed to hurt your standing for, you know, postseason play. Because it's a game that you don't have to be a part of. You know, you get there as a reward, so you're not going to get punished for losing that game.
Right, which I can appreciate, being from a big boy conference. You know, that makes it all the better for us, because if it doesn't count against you if you lose it, and it does count against you if you win it, that's a win-win, right?
Yeah, it's definitely all bonus, you know, and that's how it's supposed to work out. So,
did you watch the FSU Notre Dame game?
I did not.
Man.
I watched the last play, and I think it was debatable, you know, whether that was a pick play or not.
Man, here's the thing.
It was a pick play.
It was, but I don't know the rule in college. I know that in the NFL, you have the 5-yard handshake zone.
Yeah, the big argument there was that, and I forget who brought this up, but there was a back end zone camera angle from some dude's cell phone, and it shows that it was blown coverage. The cornerback that got picked on the play that drew the offensive PI call,
was supposed to
defend the far outside receiver,
and he was in the middle.
He picked up the wrong guy, and that's what led to what turned into the offensive pass interference call. And it was really close. I mean, it was a really tight call.
Man.
You know, tight call.
I don't think it was PI personally. I mean, maybe it's because I wanted to see FSU lose, and I wanted to see Notre Dame you know, win that game, because I felt like it was down to the wire. You know, it was back and forth the whole way. And honestly, both quarterbacks, Golson and Winston, looked terrible in the first half. And in the second half, it just seemed like FSU finally decided to pick up the blitz, because Notre Dame was killing them, man. Their front four was murdering them. And Winston finally turned it on in the second half. And, you know, giving thanks to his offensive line and running backs for picking up the blitz. But it shouldn't have been – you shouldn't have left it wide open like that at the very end, man.
I need to go back and I need to actually watch that game, because, yeah, I just went all, you know, microwave ESPN on it, and I just watched the highlights and just saw it, really just paid attention to the tail end of that the controversial, you know, the way that the game ended.
For sure. I wouldn't have watched it if Fatty wasn't such a huge Notre Dame fan. But he happens to be, so I had to check it out, man. I mean, it was a great game. It was wonderful, man. It was exciting. It was fun to watch. And it's too bad that it ended on that sour note, man, because Notre Dame had a pretty dramatic late touchdown there that was also fun to watch. But anyway, TCU, another great storyline out of this chunk of data that we have here.
Man, they're still scoring points. They're still shooting off fire. Well, they're not shooting off fireworks
anymore. They're not shooting
off
any fireworks.
They're bowed out. Yeah, they have. I saw this. I saw this on the wire some point in time today. It was an ESPN article that was talking about how their pyrotechnics provider had ordered enough ammunition this season in preparation for about 30 to 40 touchdowns at home games. The Frogs have already scored 45 touchdowns this season, 30 of them at home. So they're pretty much like they're on empty. They're going to have to order more or figure something out.
Or just stop scoring.
They scored 10 touchdowns against Texas Tech.
Man.
I mean, they put up 82 on them.
That is insane. They bought enough ammo for 40 touchdowns, 7 home games. That's a little under 6 touchdowns a game.
Right.
And they ran out. And they still have how many home games left?
Yeah, I think they still have a couple more to go, so they got to figure something out. It's insane. Speaking of insane, getting back to the SEC, I saw this today as well. Nick Saban's house, he's got a nice little spread, about 8,000 square feet, $3.1 million estate. The boosters at Alabama paid for his house, went ahead and paid it off.
That comes as no surprise to me. Right. And I think it's a travesty that this just gets swept under the rug. I wouldn't have heard this story if you didn't point it out to me. But no one bats an eye. You know, boosters pay $3.1 million for Nick Saban's, the balance on his mortgage, it's done, you know?
Right. And this is Gurley, on top of his salary. He makes like $7 million a year.
Hey, but that's what you got to do to win in the SEC, man.
That's true. That's true.
Hey,
And it is allowed. I mean, it is something that is legal. So let's get that out of the way. There is it is allowed for the, you know, these boosters to pay for, you know, subsidize, coach.
Subsidize 100%.
Yeah, pretty much.
But Todd Gurley accepts $400 for signing some merch and suspended 2 games.
Yeah, you know, it's all backwards.
Come on, man.
I did see that Georgia had stopped selling Todd Gurley merch, though.
Well, yeah, all the backlash.
Is that a step in the right direction?
When the story broke, you could still get a Todd Gurley jersey online for $135.
Right. I mean, it's just, it's embarrassing, you know. And hopefully that does change. I know we talked about that last episode. It needs to change. It just really does. It just doesn't make sense when you think about it. Not with all the money being made.
It's antiquated and asinine. And, like Eric Cartman said, so how do you get away without paying your slaves?
Exactly.
Here's a story that didn't make it to our note sheet, but we talked about it. The University of Michigan in the Big House, 103,000-seat stadium, in an unprecedented move, slashed ticket prices about 40%. Now students are offered 7 home game packages for $175. That is, for real. I'd pay that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Even being a broke college student, you could find $175.
You know? Yeah, you could just not drink for a month.
Donate plasma or some shit.
Donate plasma and drink a little bit lighter. You'll be a lightweight anyway.
Exactly. But, so down from $280. And I think that's the first time in NCAA football history that ticket prices have been slashed almost in half.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, man. I mean, it's desperate times call for desperate measures, and it's some desperate times there at the Big House. Michigan is a proud and storied franchise. They got a very passionate, you know, fan base and, you know, a set of boosters, and they've fallen on some hard times. Brady Hoke is going to get axed.
Oh, he's done.
I mean, it's and that's a mess. I mean, they just look bad. That's all you can say. I mean, they're like, it's like them in Florida. They just look bad. It's a bad product getting put out there on the field.
It's kind of like the Atlanta Falcons right now.
No, man, don't even get me started. Mike Smith doesn't need to make a pass this bye week. I mean, we could hop right into that real quick.
You think Smith's going to get canned?
He has to. He has to, man.
I don't know, man. I think so. Here's the thing. I still have faith in Dimitroff and Smith, man. You can't really put this season or last season on them, given the fact that we've lost 80% of our offensive line both years.
Right, but here's the thing. Okay, and granted, I didn't watch the game. I didn't get up at 6 a.m. to watch the game at Wembley.
I didn't watch it either. It's on my DVR. I checked the highlights, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to put myself through the misery.
Here's the recap that got me, and this is what all the major networks are running with. The Falcons had a 21-0 lead going into halftime. They had a little over a minute left. They had all of their timeouts.
Right.
But instead of doing something, like trying to drive, try to get a field goal range, try to just throw a Hail Mary, you got them on the ground. Why not put your foot to the throat and choke them out a little bit? Mike Smith did what he typically does, and he played super conservative, and he just knelt out the clock. And it didn't seem like a big deal at the time, but I think that just kind of shows the fact that Smith isn't making the right decisions. You know, I think it was an AJC article that was talking about how Mike Smith is overly conservative when he needs to be aggressive, and vice versa. He'll get overly aggressive and go for it on 4th and 3 inside of the 30, you know, with 10 minutes left in the first quarter. You know, for no apparent reason. So, I mean, are the injuries, you know, anybody's fault? No, of course they're not. But, you know, at some point, you got to start making the changes. And I think, unfortunately, that's where the axe is going to fall first. It's going to hit the head coach, probably grab some of those coordinators on the way out. And then Dimitroff is going to be next on the chopping block, man. I mean, I hate to say it. I love the fact that this whole regime has brought us. We're the second winningest franchise since that regime took over.
Exactly.
Only behind the Patriots in
the
past, X number of years. It's been a very successful run for this team. But we won 4 games last year. We are struggling to try to win 4 games this year.
I pointed out that fact to a Buffalo Bills fan who decided that it was a prime time to talk shit to the Falcons fan in the group. And, you know, the thing is that we have been one of the most successful franchises since 2006.
Somewhere thereabouts, yeah.
You know, to defend Mike Smith a little bit, going forward on 4th and 3, it makes a lot of sense when you consider the flow of the game. You know, if you're driving and you're on, you know, the seventh play of a drive,
right,
and you've eaten 8 minutes off the clock, and you're in, you know, threatening to the red, you're on the 40, you know, the 40-yard line, of course you're going to go for it.
Right.
You know, when you're up 21 points, you just want to get into the half and protect your lead. You don't want to turn the ball over.
The thing is, though, there were other questionable calls that led at the very end of the game where there were just bad plays called. You know, stuff that they should have just run the ball 3 straight times, but instead they throw a screen pass.
Julio drops it.
Julio drops a pass.
Right.
You know, they don't run it on 3rd down. Detroit didn't have any timeouts left. You know, stuff like that. I mean, you just look at it, man. If I make that mistake in Madden, I'm kicking myself. If Mike Smith makes that mistake in the NFL, he needs to just go ahead and remove himself from the team. It's just, I mean, and it's, you know, I hate to say it, man, because like I said, after suffering through the Falcons since the Chris Miller days and the Jeff George, I mean, it was great when Chris Chandler and all them got there and we made it to the Super Bowl. But ever since then, it's just been a mess, and we're headed back in that direction. I don't want to go back there. And if,
man,
Mike Smith's got to go, if he's got to be sacrificed to stay out of that or have a chance at that, sacrifice him.
I don't want to go. I don't ever want to go back to that either, man. I'm just not ready to jump ship quite yet. You know, let's see. Let's give him one more year, man. Because honestly, losing 80% of your offensive line to injury, that makes the offense look terrible.
And you're
right. That leaves the defense on the field for 80% of the game, so it makes the defense look terrible. Now, starting two inexperienced cornerbacks hasn't helped our situation.
But they're getting better. So, I mean, that's that's a positive. I think it's a positive. Yeah.
Letting Akeem Dent go for a backup quarterback when your starting quarterback hasn't missed, he's missed two games over the past 4 years.
Yeah,
you know, mistake.
It's little things like that that make you question it.
Right, but I'm not ready to jump ship, man. Thomas Dimitroff has done great things for the franchise. Mike Smith has been a great coach for the most part. You know, I'm not ready, man. I'm still with you, Mike Smith and TD. I'm with you.
Look, man, I'll co-sign with you. Let's go one more year. We're going to get a top 10 pick this year. We're 2-6 right now. It's not looking pretty. Oakland is probably going to get the number one pick. They haven't won a game yet.
They stand a legit chance to go 0-16.
They're going
to
run
perfect season.
They're going to run the table backwards, and then they're going to trip at the goal line.
How pissed are you going to be if you're a member of that Detroit Lions franchise and you just get Trump?
Do you think they'll celebrate like the Miami Dolphins, the 72 Dolphins? Will you think they're gonna pop champagne and smoke cigars when the last winless team notches a win?
Man, I don't know.
I sure as hell would. I mean, at least you got something, you know, something that you get. You'll be a Jeopardy question one of these days,
right?
So, you know, one more year. I'm okay with that. You know, let them have one more year. They need to figure out. You know, they got to draft another great lineman, whether it's on O line or D line. And things got to change up because, yeah, by this time next year, it's not going to fly. You know, I mean, heads are going to roll if they make it that far. So,
for sure. So moving off of a depressing topic, let's go to something a little bit more fun and lighthearted. Let me ask you a trivia question. What do Rex Chapman and Joseph Randall have in common?
I can't think of anything.
You're lying, man. Think about it.
I mean, they both have the letter R in their name, but Rex is in his first name and Randall's in his last name.
They're both shoplifters.
Oh, you're right.
Joseph
I didn't even think
Randall.
About that. That's right.
He was Joseph Randall was caught stealing underwear and cologne from a Dillard's in Stonebriar Center Mall. grand total of about $115.
Yeah, you know, I totally forgot about that story, and then you mentioned it. I realized that it was on the, that happened, about a week ago, week and a half ago. Well, who does that?
I'll tell you who does that. Shaq Jones, former UGA Bulldog.
He's got an excuse. He's not getting paid. Joseph Randall's base salary is a little under $500,000 a year.
Right.
Dude, why? Why do you even go and... How does that even enter your mind? You're in the NFL. Like, does that... I'm blown away. I just could not... I can't understand it. I just can't.
I chalk it up to maybe the sense of entitlement. Like, maybe he's just... He feels like he's above the law. Or maybe he's just been doing this his entire life. I mean, I think it's coincidence, or maybe not, that the tester bottle of cologne that he stole was a Gucci... Guilty Black. Now, I'm not being a racist here.
He's got some African in him. And I don't say that in a bad way.
I don't say that in a bad way. You know, I'm just pointing out facts.
The fact that it's Gucci Guilty.
Right.
It's just like, come on, man. And it's a tester bottle for crying out loud.
Man, come
who
on, man.
Who does that?
Don't tell me. Who in the NFL does that? Don't tell me that you didn't know some unsavory characters that used to steal tester bottles of cologne because we both knew them. Come on, man.
I'm just saying, man. none of those dudes are playing in the NFL making a base salary of $500,000 for the year.
This is true.
I'm just saying, man. Come on, man. Don't
this
do that.
This is true.
Don't do that. There was a... when I saw the... I saw the article. Kevin Milliken had a Facebook comment, and he nailed it. He simply put, Frisco PD greater than the Seahawks defense because they were able to stop Joseph Randall. Game over.
Boom. He said it. Kevin Milliken nailed it.
Staying on the Cowboys, yeah, you remember when we mentioned DeMarco Murray in Episode 8?
Yep.
Guess who's on pace to get... I don't think he's on pace to break the rushing record, but he's going to be like Adrian Peterson child beater pace to get with, you know, close to hitting the season rushing record. So I think last time, I don't know how he's doing after tonight, but before this, you know, before tonight's game, he was on average to be within like 50 yards, I think, of setting the rushing record.
So he, before tonight's game, he had set the record for the only running back in NFL history to notch 100-yard rushing in the first 7 games.
Which is impressive.
So his stat line from tonight, 141 yards, no touchdowns.
Wow, so he's still at it.
Right.
Who won that game, by the way?
Man.
Spoiler alert.
Let me read the rest of his stat line. 4 catches for 80 as well.
Dude, so he
221 all-purpose yards.
He did work.
He did all that work to lose to the Redskins in overtime.
No.
Boom, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, no.
Live score update, spoiler alert, on the 10th FCK pod. The Redskins pull off the upset.
Wow.
Yo, I told everyone at work this morning, too. I said, check this out, man. I'm going to go ahead and go on a limb here and say the Redskins pull off the upset. And here's why. Colt McCoy rides into Texas, guns blazing.
It's a storybook ending.
Man.
Yeah, you know what?
McCoy threw for almost 300 yards.
That's your third-string quarterback, ladies and gentlemen.
25 of 30 for 299, no touchdowns, one pick.
Not too shabby.
Guns blazing. The Redskins pull off the shocker.
Wow.
Insane.
Former Longhorn. Good job, man. Way to go.
Hook 'em horns.
That's impressive. Yeah, because to be honest with you, Dallas looks legit. And they still do. This is one of those trap games where it's, you know, it's a divisional game, it's a rivalry game. Of course you're gonna lose it no matter what.
I don't wanna say no matter what, you know.
It's just one of those things where just the universe is just gonna conspire against you.
You remember last year Dallas was embroiled in a 3-way tie damn near with the Redskins and the Eagles?
Yes.
Like that division, man, they're neck and neck.
That's a tough division.
I'm telling you, it may look like Dallas is the front runner in that, but let's see how everything shakes down in about 5 weeks.
Yeah, speaking of divisions, going back to the Falcons, we're 2-6. We are 1.5 games out of first place.
Man, so breaking news, actually, this just in, the NFC South has conceded their spot in the playoffs.
Oh, word.
And accepted a bid to the Capital One Bowl this year.
They might not be favored in that game. Depends on who gets in on the other side of that matchup.
Did we go over did we make that joke already? Man, I don't even know.
It's worth making another time.
It's that damn funny, y'all. So here's the thing. We had discussed on episode 8 that DeMarco Murray was the last running back in a solo back system.
Bell cow.
Right? And you know, he's risen to the occasion as well. I mean, albeit in a losing effort, he still put up 221 all purpose yards, man.
That's impressive. I mean, again, especially in this day and age where you got quarterbacks throwing, you know, for damn near 5,000 yards.
Man.
To get enough carries to run for 100 yards is impressive. And he's not just barely getting like 103, 104 yards. What do you say, like a buck 40?
Buck 41 on 19 carries.
Dude, props. Props to DeMarco Murray.
For sure, man.
Yeah, that's a nice stat line. Yeah, good job, especially with his pass happy league.
Exactly. Speaking of pass happy league, man, we were talking about is Tom Brady done in that same episode. Come to find out, he is not done.
No, he's not.
With an exclamation point, not.
Yeah, he the Patriots, I believe, are 4-0 since they dropped that game to Kansas City. And
Brady's been going crazy too, man. He's thrown for like 1,200 yards in the past 4 games.
He threw 5 touchdowns last night.
That's what I'm saying.
And he wasn't even crazy. The high. Ben Roethlisberger threw 6.
Big Ben, 6 touchdowns, 522 yards in the air.
The most nonchalant 6 touchdown, 500 yard, you know, performance that you'll probably ever see.
In the jailbreak Bumblebee uniform, man.
I kind of like those uniforms.
No, you don't. Get out of here. You don't like
just
that.
Just in short bursts. I just saw bits and pieces of the game because I kept on watching to see if he was going to, you know, get a 7th touchdown, see what was going to happen. He was actually getting close to setting the all-time record, which is like maybe 560 some odd yards. He was only like 40-some-odd yards off that, so I was watching the back half of that game, the back end of the game, to see if he would catch it.
Those uniforms are awful.
I mean, they're pretty atrocious. Like I said, I only watched the game for about 15 minutes all total.
The only time I like those uniforms is when James Harrison wears it, because he looks like a felon.
This is true.
Implies that he wears the jailbreak uniform. But here's a stat for you. There's only 15 quarterbacks ever who have passed for 500 yards or more in a game. Ben Roethlisberger makes the list twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh like doesn't that? Even have receivers.
Man, they got this kid. I don't know if you're aware of him. Antonio Brown, he's kind of a big deal right now.
I mean, you know what I mean, though. This isn't exactly... I wouldn't be surprised if the St. Louis Rams back during the Greatest Show on Turf days, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw Kurt Warner on that list twice.
Man, but...
I wouldn't even be surprised if I saw Matt Stafford on that list twice.
Neither Kurt Warner nor... Oh, no, Matt Stafford is on the list. January 1st, 2012 versus the Packers. Stafford went 36 of 59 for 520 yards and 5 touchdowns.
That's a lot of passes. 59 passes.
Who did you say? Who else?
I was thinking Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
I mean, other just gunslingers. I mean, Jay Cutler would end up having one of those wonky games where he just like goes like 40 for 60.
Man, speaking of wonky games, Cutler, I need you to pull your head out of your ass and start throwing touchdowns to Brandon Marshall, for crying out loud.
Man.
Y'all need to stop this lover's quarrel that you got going on and start connecting in the end zone, because I just pulled off the fleecingest fleece trade in the history of fleece trades.
That's that trade you're telling me
about.
Yeah,
man. I swapped Brandon Tate and Julian Edelman for Brandon Marshall. Ben Tate, running back for the Browns.
Ben Tate Julian got Edelman, up last week, so.
Former quarterback. Julian Edelman for Brandon Marshall.
That's a good trade, man. I thought it was a good trade when you mentioned it. I still think it's a good trade now. They're going to get a different quarterback in there at some point, I think.
They need to do something.
Cutler, man. He needs to stop smoking.
Man, that fool, $100 million man, playing like the $1,000 man right now.
Yeah, it hurts, man. It hurts.
So no Kurt Warner, yo.
No Kurt Warner.
Norm Van Brocklin, Y.A. Tittle, which to this day I still read his name as Y.A. Titty every time I see it.
One of the greatest names of all time.
Vince Ferragamo, Phil Simms, Dan Marino, Warren Moon, Boomer.
Boomer!
Elvis Gerbach.
Wow,
I think I remember this game. November
that's
5th, 2000.
Game?
Yeah, Chiefs versus the Raiders. 39 of 53 for 504 and 2 touches.
See, now that's efficient. 39 completions for 500 yards. You're dropping dimes almost 20 yards apiece.
Word.
A completion.
Word. Drew Brees.
That doesn't surprise me.
Not at all. Roethlisberger, Brady in 2011. Stafford, Eli Manning, Matt Schaub. In his MVP campaign, who is now like he fell off the face of the earth now, man.
Yeah, I'm glad that we traded him when we did.
Romo.
Sorry about that, Houston.
He looked legit.
We started the trend, man, and New England followed. You know,
he was
quarterbacks and then trading him for higher picks in the future.
But he was a legit Pro Bowl quarterback.
He looked good.
Very good for a little while there. Tony Romo, Ben Roethlisberger. That's it.
Phil Simms is one of the surprises. Gerbach is probably the biggest surprise off that list.
Word.
Because those Giants teams didn't really sling the ball too much either.
1985.
That's a lot for that time.
Mark Bavaro?
Yeah.
Otis Anderson.
Otis Anderson running back. That killer defense led by LT.
LT for
LT
sure.
LT won, yeah.
Who was their receiver?
To think back of those Tecmo Super Bowl days.
For sure. Speaking of record-breaking quarterbacks, Peyton Manning broke
Congrats.
The career touchdown record.
I don't think anybody's going to catch that, though.
Man, Peyton, he's... For the life of me, I can't understand why he never figured out how to throw a spiral, but he is the most prolific quarterback in NFL history. Like, I'll argue Peyton Manning until the cows come home.
Stat-wise, yeah, there's no comparing. I mean, the only other guy that even really comes close when I think about it is like a Dan Marino type, somebody that has like amassed so much statistical, so many statistical accolades. And I think he never won a Super
Bowl. Never won a Super Bowl.
Peyton has won.
And for the record, Peyton's going back through and rewriting all those books anyway. So through this week, Peyton has 22 touchdowns and 7 interceptions.
That's just filthy.
And he's like 40? How old is Peyton Manning?
I think he's pushed for. I think he's 38.
He's 38 and he's got a bionic neck right now. He is 38 years old. Good job.
And he could probably play him between him and Brady. One of those two is going to play till they're 40.
For sure, man.
I think one of those two will make it to 40.
Man, I think Peyton's going to make it well into 40. I'm talking like 44.
I just worry because he's got the fused neck, so at some point in time he's going to have to really think about that. You know, and he's going to be at the point now where it's like, well, what else are you going to do? How, I mean, he's going to set the bar even further, even higher up. I mean, he's just, you know, props to him. I mean, we've been watching him since he was shredding, you know, SEC defenses, you know, when he was in Tennessee. So I'm pretty sure we can say we saw that coming. Maybe not to this degree, you know, but it's going to be hard to break that, you know, to break that record.
So do we stick with the NFL then?
Let's see. The only other thing I was going to really wanted to hit, there's two things. Kyle Orton making me have to almost eat some crow here.
Captain Neck Hair.
Talking about how EJ Manuel was the better idea, you know, to keep him developing, and then he goes and messes around and throws four touchdowns against the Jets.
Man.
So hey, props where it's due. My bad, Kyle Orton.
It is the Jets though, man.
I think the Jets are a mess too.
They are a mess. And for the record, a great play from that game, Sammy Watkins. Old show-off, showboat Sammy started high-stepping right around the 8-yard line and gets tackled at the 5.
Yeah, he put the me and Sammy, man. And he messed around and then loses the 6 points. You know?
Tisk, Sammy.
Rookie mistakes, man.
Welcome to the league, though. Hey, you know, make sure you run by everyone before you start celebrating.
Yeah, for sure. One other quick hitter, Lamar Houston joins the Sack Dance Hall of Fame. Blew his knee out after celebrating a sack last night. They were down like 3 touchdowns. Like, what are you celebrating for?
It was like 3 minutes to go on the fourth.
And then what's the point, man? I was like, come on, man. Are you serious right now? He deserved to, you know, when Gramatica hit the game-winning kick, jumped and then blew his knee up. I get that, man. It's a game-winner. Lamar Houston, man, you got no business doing that, man. Just settle down.
I have trouble laughing at this, though, man, because it brought me back to when Malcolm Mitchell blew out his ACL celebrating Todd Gurley's touchdown.
But see, here's the thing. The difference, the saving grace of Malcolm Mitchell, he was going to celebrate his teammate.
Right.
So he was trying to say, hey, you know, great job, you know, great job, team. Lamar Houston just wanted to hop up and, you know, and me it up, and then, you know, blew his knee up instead. So,
me it up and then knee it up.
Yeah, messed it right on up. So, Seattle Seahawks, man, for the regional fans that may be listening. Kind of a mess. You hear about that Russell Wilson deal?
I did not. I heard that Marshawn Lynch will not be with the team after this year.
Yeah, I think that wasn't going to happen for a while anyway. I think that was an inevitability, regardless of how the season is turning out, which is not too great. Super Bowl hangover. Call it what you want.
Word. So what's the Russell Wilson bit?
So the whole Russell Wilson thing, Bleacher Report did a quick team survey, and unnamed teammates, several of them were saying that Russell Wilson isn't black enough.
He's got some African in him, and I don't say that in a bad way.
But not enough African in him.
Yes. I mean, Danny Ferry, he does have some African in him, but according to some of his unnamed teammates, he doesn't have enough. Whatever, man. I mean,
so he doesn't have a ghetto pass?
Yeah, it's like, so he doesn't have enough street cred. He needs to steal a tester bottle of Gucci Guilty Black and some underwear and get your cred up. Hang out with Aaron Hernandez.
Exactly. Speaking of street cred, why don't you take a selfie with a pistol in your hand and a Gucci shirt?
Man, that was... We'll have to, if we remember to, we'll be sure to post this on the Facebook page, facebook.com/FreshCoastClick with a K, K-L-I-Q. Aaron Hernandez, circa 2009, taking the selfie. Not only is he taking a selfie, you know, but he styled it. He accessorized it. With a pistol.
Man, I'm telling you, dude, he must have deleted the duck face picture and decided to go with that picture for his Instagram account or something, man.
It's pure genius. I mean, Aaron Hernandez, man.
Speaking of Aaron Hernandez, are you aware that the 2008 University of Florida football team has murdered more Americans than the Ebola virus?
That's a good one. That's, hey. doing work, man.
Shouts out to Aaron Bout That Life Hernandez, I guess.
And he's been, yeah, I mean, that's just the best way to describe him, man. He is about that life for sure.
Coogee shirts, what up?
Yeah.
At least Biggie was wearing a Coogee sweater. Like, you think he took the sweater off for the pic to show off his muscles or something?
Might have been, man. He probably. Man, those sweaters are ugly too.
Speaking of Instagram and selfies, J.J. Watt took a selfie.
I heard about that.
Right after he sacked Zach Mettenberger for the second time.
I like how J.J. Watt was talking about, like, hey, man, look here, rookie. You need to know, you know, take it from this wily old vet. He's been in the league for like 3 years.
I know, man. Like, I was just going to say, this wily old 27-year-old.
He's still on his rookie contract. He's trying to tell this other rookie, look, man, this is how it's done around here.
He's not even 27. How old is Watt?
He's like, I think he's 25. Like, for real, man. He's like still, he could very well still be on his rookie deal.
He is 25. You're on fire with that tonight, man.
I'm on it, man.
He's 25, man, this dude. But I think it's hilarious because Mettenberger's stupid ass took a selfie and posted it like hours before the game. You know,
and he
I mean?
Called. I like Watt for calling him out like that. It's like,
oh,
hey, man.
Hell yeah, man!
He needs to be like Marshawn Lynch, man. Just be about that action, boss.
Houston is my AFC team, man, because I love J.J. Watt for this. I love. Now that Clowney is gone from South Carolina, you know, and we took so many ass kickings because of Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
You know, I love Clowney. Who else is on that? I like Arian Foster, man. Like, I'm telling you, Houston.
Houston's got a stable of, like, SEC players now that you're talking about. Well, I mean, at least with Foster and Clowney. Andre Johnson was a Miami guy.
The U.
But, yeah, man, I like J.J. Watt. He's the third leading scorer on the Dynasty team still.
Word.
So he's something else. He is otherworldly. So what do you want to do from here? You want to do NBA talk? You want to do fantasy talk?
Man, we could go ahead and hit the NBA real quick. We're going to roll right on through, man. We're right at our limit right now. But since it's the 10th episode, let's go ahead and give him a bonus, man. You want to hit the NBA?
And look, man, yeah, we got to do this right because you're not going to be here. You're going to be you know what I'm expecting? I'm expecting a live session,
man,
from Jacksonville.
From the stands,
live
from the
report.
Tailgate. I'll do it from the tailgate.
Yeah, I want to see you and Mr. Peacock. We need to get in on that. I'll hold it down here, hold it down here in the Northwest, and then I fully expect some audio, if not video, of you guys living it up at Georgia, Florida.
Let's just say we got something on the docket, man. We got something planned. I'm not going to give away too much, but we got something for y'all.
Can't wait.
For sure. Check this out, though. Let's go ahead and hit MLB, because big shouts out to Mr. Kojak Delta, the KC masterpiece.
Delta!
Yeah, man. It's not looking so good for your Royals, though, bruh. I thought they were going to sweep and just go ahead and roll on through. But alas, it's 3-2, advantage San Francisco at the moment. So
the Royals gonna get Game 6.
I hope so.
You can almost bank
on
that. I mean, it's
if they get Game 6, I will watch Game 7.
To
be honest,
watch that too.
I've been tracking it and I've been listening to it because it's been coming on like when I'm coming home from work, and like I'll take the fam out to dinner and I'll be listening to it when I'm at the bar. Checking in on the TV, sneaking a look, you know, here and there. But how about Mad Bum, dude? This fool.
Man.
We talked about him last episode. They got him on a cheap deal, and he went shutout.
Complete game shutout.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, he slammed the door on him.
I'm sitting there folding laundry last night, and I got that game tuned in, and I'm sitting there watching like, dude. I mean, he's just putting in work. I mean, he's making the argument for being the best pitcher in the state of California.
Yo.
You hear me talking, Clayton Kershaw? Bumgarner's got you, dog.
You hear me, Jeff Samardzija?
But yeah, man, I mean, I hope that Kansas City takes Game 6. I think the momentum will be with them, getting back home, getting back in front of that home crowd, getting that DH back. They
for
look
sure.
helpless without Butler.
Man.
To break up that lineup. I watched a good bit of it last night, and they just Bum just ran through that lineup because he did not have to face a right-handed hitter that was, you know, of any threat to them.
So. But if the Giants finish this out, man, that's the third World Series in 5 years.
That'll be impressive. I mean, it was...
That's like dynasty status, man.
I think it is. I mean, it really is. And they don't look like they're going to really slow down too much, man. I mean, they got a nice thing going there. And, they're scary good. And they're showing it. And, I mean, they're just doing work. I mean, I saw them. They were up 2-0 and just cruising. Then by the time, you know, the game was over, they won, what, 5-0?
Word.
I mean, it was just a clean game, man. So...
Lots of moving along, lots of overhaul going on in the Braves organization, the fallout, so to speak. You want to go over the quick hit list here?
Yeah, I think the main thing, the common theme is that it seems like there's been a lot of former Braves personnel coming back into the fold. One of the opinions that I've been picking up on is pretty common is that a lot of these guys didn't want to work under Frank Wren, the former general manager who was disposed of earlier this offseason. So you got a lot of guys that are coming back into, you know, coming back home, basically. And it seems like they're really bulking up as far as getting, like, the scouting department's going to be taking a step up. You know, they're going to get a lot of guys. I mean, we're talking about a guy like, and I mean, you all know the name, Brian Bridges, promoted to scouting director. The main thing to keep in mind here, this guy had a hand in drafting the likes of Craig Kimbrell, Jason Hayward,
Jay Hay,
other guys, Alex Wood, Mike Minor. So, I mean, these are guys, and these are the types of talent evaluators that the Braves are bringing, you know, in. And they're either former Braves personnel or they're highly regarded players from other franchises.
I think it's telling that there's a list of all-star guys that didn't want to work for Frank Wren. You know, like, that's a little telling, man. The what would we have been had we not made that decision?
Yeah, and I think that's the rub on Frank Wren, is that I think that he was just that kind of guy that just was, he was just alienating people, and he was driving people away, and it just got to a point where the Braves could not operate with that anymore. Like, they had to get back to being able to get these guys that they know that have had proven results. So bottom line is there's a lot of positive movement that's been going on. The Braves look like they're serious about getting back to what they were able to do in the early 90s when they got on that dynasty run, was have a good farm system.
A great farm system.
Pick and choose your free agents wisely. And that farm system lets you make sound trades. I mean, it seemed like, wasn't it every year that we made a great deadline deal? Fred McGriff. Getting a guy like a Marquise Grissom. Getting Kenny Lofton. Guys like that. We don't do that anymore.
We don't have the farm system to do that, you know, and we sold the farm, you know, to get guys like Mark Teixeira.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we let the bottom fall out a little bit, and we got away from that. So I like the move. I like that we're getting back to that, you know, like what made us great back in the early 90s, you know, early to mid 90s, you know. So again, it's just another, you know, another depth. It seems like baseball is one of those sports where you can just dig deeper and deeper and deeper, and however deep you want to go with it, man, like, there is a level of statistical analysis, you know, like, where they're sending dudes all over the world to scout out, you know, Panamanian baseball players and,
right,
you know, Korean baseball players and so on and so forth. One of the notables that we talked about before the podcast was that we're bringing on Kevin Seitzer as the hitting coach.
Right,
I butchered your name, I apologize. But, you know, you made a good point, is that how much does it really matter to have a good hitting coach?
And it's difficult to project that. And before we get further on into, into the baseball talk, I want to give a special shout-out and a condolences. Oscar Tavares, big-time prospect for the Cardinals, and his girlfriend, Adelia Arvelo, were killed in a car accident yesterday.
Yeah, I heard about that, man.
So that actually interrupted the World Series game, and they did a quick moment of silence. So I figured one moment of silence here for that. You know, always tough to have a life cut short, always tough to have a talent, you know, robbed from a team. Condolences to Tavares and his family, and his girlfriend's family as well. You know, just another life cut, you know, cut short, man.
I hate to wrap on that note, man. Let's talk about John Hart for a minute.
No, let's do that. I mean, so well, let's get back. Let's get back to the whole the hitting coach thing. The thing we were talking about there was, no matter, because the first thing I wanted to do, and you know, I kind of found myself getting back into baseball a little bit.
Yeah, I like it though. It's cool. You
know, I like the life that the Braves are bringing back in there, and I hope this keeps up because I kind of like looking at that. Like, oh man, you know, we got all these different layers, like you said, of talent evaluation, and it looks like they're kind of getting these guys, you know, that are doing the right thing, that know how to scout these guys.
It's like a breath of fresh air for the organization.
Right, it is, because we started turning into, you know, taking the stance of, I'm not even going to say that upstate team from New York wearing the pinstripes, but like, let's look at like the Dodgers, for example. You can't just keep spending money. I mean, you can, and you kind of have to, but it's more sustainable if you have a good farm system.
Right.
If you've got talent evaluators in place that know what they're doing.
If you've got sabermetricians at the helm.
And I'm excited to see that. So, like you were saying, John Hart, he accepts the job as president of baseball operations. Now, this does two things. One, it effectively locks out us hiring a general manager. I guess you still can hire a general manager, but I think that Hart is going to basically take the role. He's going to be like a Theo Epstein. He's going to be the major advisor to whoever the assistant GM is on the staff. And our current assistant GM is John Coppolella, the highly regarded assistant that we have in place now. So it looks like that's what we're going to roll with going forward. So that's the one side of it. Hart signed this deal. He's on for 3 years. So that basically gives him 3 years to, you know, personally train Coppolella into the role that he will, you know, presumably take over in that, you know, after that 3 years is up, which is, you know, being the GM of the team. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, Hart, it's hard to argue, his pedigree. He's had a lot of success in a lot of places, and his, he's a highly regarded front office man.
I think that makes all the difference, you know, bringing it back a few moments and talking about the farm system, you know, and not only making the right decisions to keep the farm well stocked with talent, but also picking out the diamonds in the rough. I think that the Kansas City Royals are a great example of this. I mean, if you think about the Royals team this year, they really got it done with a dominant bullpen, who's right. An unsung hero. You know, one of the unsung heroes is always, you know, it's often overlooked as having a shutdown bullpen.
Yeah.
You know, like Kojak said, you know, from six on, you ain't getting nothing.
Yeah, and that's what the Giants have done, right? That as well, where they have
they move Lincecum to the bullpen.
You get
for that
five
reason.
Innings. Yeah, if you don't make something happen in five innings, you might not make, you know, anything happen for the last for the back four.
For sure, it's over at that point. Another thing to point out is that they not only have the most dominant bullpen in baseball, but also an outfield that saves a hell of a lot of runs. Between Dyson and Lorenzo Cain, they don't really surrender a whole lot, man. They cover that entire outfield with just two guys for the most part.
I saw this infograph on just how much ground that outfield can cover, and they can rival the Braves when they had Hayward patrolling out there.
Upton.
And then you had Upton and the Upton boys up there.
Word.
Where they could just cover so much ground. Or even taking it back even further, when the Braves had Andrew Jones patrolling center field.
A young Andrew Jones, before he was big fat Andrew Jones.
Yeah, and then there was like kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek talk about, well, if the Braves go ahead and sign Ichiro,
right?
They could go ahead and just play two outfielders because those two guys can cover the entire expanse of the outfield.
I'm pretty sure we were the co-presidents of the Bring Ichiro to Atlanta movement.
That would have been
back
great
when
to
that
see.
Was back before he signed with those dudes that wear pinstripe. But another, I actually like the Nate McClouth. Nate McClouth and Jeff Francoeur outfield that we had, because Frenchie's got that cannon, man. I mean,
he does, yeah.
He's got a big old hole in his swing, but
laser. He's got a laser rocket arm. Though.
Exactly.
But you can throw a baseball over them mountains.
Throw a baseball about a quarter mile. But anyway, we'll wrap on Uncle Rico. You know, we went an extra 10 minutes for y'all since it is our 10th podcast, and we didn't even touch the NBA, man. So maybe you could use that as a jump off for your solo dolo supplemental podcast.
Yeah, you know, we could do that. Yeah, so thank everybody. I want to thank everybody out there listening to us, you know, wherever y'all are at. You know, one thing I want to talk about, we've had a, you know, quite a handful of, you know, we joked about these catfishes, you know, joining, you know, liking our page, but we've had quite a few more get in there. So maybe it's legit. You know, who knows? We've had quite a few, we've had quite a few more ads lately. So let me see if I can pull them up real quick and give them a shout out. You know, the main thing I want to talk about, big shout out again, Kojak Delta. Thank you for, you know, for taking the time and getting that segment put together for us. You know, for the last episode, we really appreciated that. Bad Mr. Frosty, I got on you yesterday, or no, I'm sorry, it was today. About getting you know, getting in there, you know, the Bills are looking legit again, so you need to get up in there and, you know, get us a piece for the podcast, make that happen.
The Bills are 5-3 right now?
I think so.
Man, they could legitimately go ahead and win that division. I don't know. Let's be realistic here, man. New England is back on a warpath. New England's going to win that division.
I think so.
But, you know, that's not to say that the Bills can't go, you know, 10-6 and get that wild card. You know, who knows?
If the Bills go 10-6, I'll be impressed. So I'm not even going to try to pronounce these names. Let's just say we've had 1, 2, 3, 4. We had 5 new ads, and they're all very, how should I put it?
Suspect.
Very internationally sounding. So let me just look at here. So we got one person. Well, they live in St. Paul, Minnesota. That's not very international.
Not at all.
This one.
It's almost Canada.
This person studied at an Islamic university. This other person here, oh, that's a U.S. one. Maybe I'm just talking on my backside. This one's from Tehran, and we got the last one, the most recent one. I don't know where's Escola.
Who knows? But shouts out to the catfish. If you're not a catfish, prove me wrong.
Yeah,
holler at us. Drop a line.
Well, thank you guys again, making episode number 10. A great one. We're looking forward to, you know, it's kind of funny. We're looking forward to 10 more at the very least.
Oh, at the very, very least.
Yeah, we'll get 10 more before the year's out. That's for sure.
For sure. So, for sure. We'll holler at you next time.
Stay fresh, y'all.